So how would you describe that experience that you just had when you went from the relaxation of being grounded, so to speak, right? The sinking in, the grounding, the relaxation to suddenly expansion and no time. You don't even have to actually give me a word for the moment. Just reflect upon that. Maybe next week we can talk about it words. But that's Zen, Chan, Dhyan. And it's a very small taste, and perhaps someone's going to listen to this discourse and think I'm an apostate, which means a heretic in allowing that small, brief experience to be called Chan or Zen or Dhyan, because many people assume it can only happen after long, long hours of practice. And certainly to maintain deep states, it will take a lot of practice. But to experience that experience of being present, even for just a moment, is possible in a very, just like you did today, with certain guidance. And so we moved in to understand what does it mean, as I put in the title of the discourse today, to be here now. Be here now is a quote that was, is the title, in fact, of a book by Richard Alpert, or Ram Dass. This is a Dane name. And I've just put it into the chat box so you can see Be Here Now. It's a very lovely book. It's a graphic book. It's not a book that has a lot of text. It has a lot of graphics, and it's very slanted towards traditional Vedanta, which is where he comes from. Richard Alpert, I have brought this out before, was a colleague of Timothy Leary. He's a psychologist or psychiatrist. I don't remember what his exact training was. He just passed away last year. And he was one of the early scientists involved in the testing and research of LSD. And through his experiences with that, he, I guess, found Vedanta and the Hindu tradition and moved to there, became a very famous guru and teacher. And he wrote this book called Be Here Now. But the saying, be here now, it consists of three words. And it's a great little saying. The first word, be. First of all, what does it mean to be? Second word, here. Where is here? Is here physically here? Is here in our heads here? Is here in a projection where our heads may be going? Is here tied to our physical body, to our metaphysical body, to our attention span, to something else? And then the third word is now. What is now? And this is the part that we tie into, a matter of fact, in effect, all three words are very closely connected to the concepts that are taught and presented in the Zen tradition or the Chan tradition. Because the Chan tradition emphasizes being in the present. It emphasizes not striving for some spiritual accomplishment, but rather understanding that the realization of the very essence of what it is to be here now is actually the spiritual accomplishment. That is Nibbana. The extinguishing of karma means we don't create any future movement. That means there is no future. The extinguishing of Nibbana means all past movement has dissolved, so there is no past. So if there is no future and there is no past, what is there? There's only now. Being here in the now. So the Zen presentation is that is what is understood and accepted to be the essential teaching of the Buddha. And not all the sutras and not all the rituals and observances and not all the other things that have become part of what the teachings were assumed to be by the time that Zen or Chan evolved in about 400, 500 AD in China mostly. The tradition has it that a Indian monk by the name of Bodhidharma brought it to China. But in theory and in claim, people are saying it's been something that was in practice all the way back to the time of the Buddha in an unbroken line. my own personal opinion that the concept of Chan or Zen is not exclusive to Buddha Dharma, although in the Buddhist format, it is more associated with that, but that in a shamanic state, in any kind of practice that takes one into presence, complete presence, and dissolution or dissolving of the ego and separate identity into the now, could be called some kind of, perhaps could be called some kind of Zen practice. So how does one do that? And what's the point in doing that? Any thoughts on that? What would be the point of being here now? Why would we want to even strive for that? Shouldn't we have goals? Shouldn't we have targets? Shouldn't we work towards things? Are they mutually exclusive? Shouldn't we remember the past, traditions, cultures? Why be here now?
I think we can remember it and we can have goals. We just can't keep ourselves stuck there. You know, we have to continue to remind ourselves that what really matters is what's happening in that moment.
Okay. Other thoughts? Why should we remember what's happening in the moment?
Say it again.
Why?
Well, to not suffer, because whatever happened has happened. We can't change it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we actually can't really change what's coming, because mm-hmm. whatever's coming is going to come. It doesn't matter. And okay. nothing, anything or any that we do is not going to change what the outcome is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's a hard thing to do that, though. It's not easy to do.
Let go.
To let go, yeah. And by doing that, then you also have less dukkha.
Right. Okay. It might be fair to say that some people think by letting go or not worrying about the future, then that's guaranteeing them to suffer because it'll be a mess and chaos. How do we respond to that? I mean, what are your responses to that?
I don't get too crazy about. I mean, it's taken me a long time, Warren, but I try so hard to stay in the present, and it has brought me a lot more peace these days.
That's very good.
Yeah.
Well, I think that if you're in the present, you are a more you're more attentive to the world, therefore to other people. It's not only about dukkha. It's about being in constant contact with what's around you and with people around you and with energies around you. I think that's very, very important, very... It's our duty as a human being to be open to the rest of the world all the time, to be attentive to what everybody else is and the people around you feel.
But isn't that, Johnny, if you're not suffering, then you can do all the things you just said. Because if you're suffering, then you can't be a better person to the people around you, you know?
In part, yes, but I think, yes, and not completely yes.
Right.
I think if you think about other people and what you're doing this very moment, you're bound not to suffer that much. I mean, you're not engulfed in your suffering.
I don't know about that.
I think for me, to be here now is to give myself completely at this moment to whatever I'm doing. Whether if I'm cooking, I'm reading or I'm talking to a friend. Mm-hmm. And when I do that, it feels good for me to just be completely, just give yourself and just be in the present. And I think it makes a difference to a friend or to a dog or to just to a painting. Even when you feel pain, whatever you're suffering, when you are give yourself completely, you automatically feel better. For me.
True. For me too.
Okay. Could we say, trying to find a way to kind of put this in a comprehensive image, perhaps to unify everything that we've just expressed, what do you think about expressing it in the form of when we're in genuine relationship to everything around us, including ourselves, then we are being here now. Does that make sense? And that kind of encompasses what you said, Johnny, about compassion. I'm extrapolating from what you said. You used the word, but I presume that's what you're referring to.
Yeah.
Compassion. Yeah. And at the same time, what Quinn said is, you know, when you give yourself to everything immediately, then you have compassion naturally for everything. And what Sam said is that when you have compassion in relationship to everything around you, then the past and the future no longer really become determinants, but rather just nodes, so to speak. You know what a node is? A node is just a point in space. Where we move from and we move to, or perhaps not even that. But being in relationship with everything genuinely and directly allows us to be here now, which allows us also to be compassionate. Because without it, it'd be very difficult to be compassionate, right?
Yeah.
Interesting question is, if we're not really being here now, then is our compassion genuine? Is ideological compassion the same thing as genuine compassion? That's an interesting question, isn't it? Does that clear what I mean by ideological compassion versus genuine compassion?
Yeah, yeah. I think it is very,
you know, very because prevalent. Because so often ideological compassion functions. You know, I always remember when I was a teenager, I went to see the musical Hair. But what struck me about Hair was one song that sang Easy to Be Cruel, which is a woman singing about her boyfriend, about asking, how can you care about strangers? How can you care about the bleeding crowd? How can you care about that? I need a friend. I just need a friend. So her boyfriend can care about everybody else in the social sense, but he can't care about her right there in front of him, which is what I call ideological compassion. People have these, you know, ideologies that they feel they have to respond to, and yet they can't be compassionate to a real person right in front of them. I'm not making any judgment on it. I'm just sharing it. Yes, Johnny?
But that's mostly the case, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so then we have to ask ourselves, is that true compassion or is that some kind of self-servingness? Yeah, which is a very interesting question itself. And that comes back to the essence of Zen and being here now is if relationship and compassion are intertwined, then the minute we're not here now, our actions are then suspect to some degree of ego direction. I mean that in the sense of ego-directed self-servingness rather than ego-directed positive activity. I'd like you to consider that for a moment. And in Chinese medicine, which is something that I've had to explain to a few people recently in Hawaii, and actually even at a dinner with some friends when we got back to Geneva Friday evening, how I got into Chinese medicine, and that I had no interest to really be a doctor at all, but it was a way to practice my Dharma, my Buddha Dharma, and rather than sitting in a monastery or becoming some kind of spiritual guru for money. And one of the things that appealed to me tremendously, and still appeals to me so much about traditional Chinese medicine, and I guess we could say traditional Oriental medicine, because it's not only China that practices it anymore, is the understanding that the physical world manifests the non-physical world, and the non-physical world affects the physical world. But the Chinese, being so empirical, rather than creating a whole study in a whole area, a field of study called psychology, they said, you don't need to do that, because when you understand the way the five elements and the energy and the way the body, everything works together, energy and the psychology is part of all reality of the body. And so rather than have to address something that's non-physical in a non-physical way, you can see its manifestations in the body's presentation physically. And of course, that's become a corner point, or a linchpin or a cornerstone of New Age health theory. You're probably all familiar with Louise Hay, the late Louise Hay, who wrote books on illnesses and their psychological or energy components. Or you'll read somewhere that if you have a pain in your knee, it's related to movement, or a pain in your back, it's related to being grounded in the earth and your status in your head. That's all taken from these original principles of Oriental medicine, that all these manifestations that we experience on the non-physical world are grounded also and manifesting, or all these symptoms rather that are manifesting in our body are originating from these other issues that are also going on. So if we look at that, we can use the reverse. And this is what I believe is one of the genius aspects of Oriental medicine. If we look in our body, is there anything in our body that cannot be here now?
No, except for our brain. Except for our brain.
Except our brain. Can it even afford to not be here now? Is there anything in our body that can afford to not be here now?
No, actually not. Even your brain.
Yeah. Yeah, pardon?
Everything physical is there. It's doing its thing.
That's right.
Or not. If it
can. The heart has, well, if it's not doing its thing, then we're in illness, aren't we?
Right.
The heart has to beat now. The breath, the lungs have to breathe now. The blood has to circulate now. The intestines have to digest now. The nourishment, the amino acids, all the vitamins and minerals have to get to the cells now. The cells have to metabolize now. They can't wait to metabolize. What happens if the blood doesn't circulate? What happens to a limb, for example, if the blood is not circulating?
In time, it will drop off.
Well, let's say you're going to a lecture and you cross your legs, and then you've been in that position for 3 hours, then you've got to stand up. What do you usually find is happened to your legs?
It's numb, it fell asleep.
It fell asleep. And it fell asleep because either the nerves were blocked or the blood circulation was blocked, correct? And as it comes back, you feel pins and needles, right? So when the body is not being here now, the body starts to degenerate. Okay, so physically we have to be here now. And in fact, aging and what happens as we age is really a process of slowing down of being here now. The body slows down for various reasons until it can't be here now. And then of course we die. So being here now is not just something we can talk about or think about, but it's actually something that has to happen every day from our body. And therefore, practices like, or I should say properly practice movements like yoga or like qigong or like various other exercises are very important for us to maintain the ability to be here now, both in body and in mind. And that is why those exercises affect our minds and help us to be calm and more happy and more healthy, because it synchronizes the physical body with the mental body. Does that make sense?
Very much.
So in Zen teaching, there's a very famous saying. I think it was Dogen, who was a Japanese Zen monk, one of the early ones, who wrote about chopping wood and carrying water. Zen is all about chopping wood and carrying water. Does anybody have an idea what they're referring to, what that means, chopping wood and carrying water? What do you think that means?
It's about survival.
Survival?
It's about, okay. It's about being there. Sorry.
Being there, okay. Go ahead, Masha.
Doing the essential things in life.
The essential things in life.
Not complicating. Chop wood to create fire and water to sustain yourself, and that's all you need.
Right. Okay. Heat and hydration, right? To provide food, to provide water to the body, and enough sustenance, that's all you need. And then we have the story of the Zen masters living in the mountain huts way up on the peaks and writing the beautiful poem, because basically they survive on the very essentials, and by simplifying their lives they start to see into the deeper meaning of everything that manifests, leading back to being here now.